Welcome to the Greg Dwyer Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your host, motivational speaker Greg Dwyer. Be sure to check out Greg at www.gregdwyer.com. That's www.gregdwyer.com. Now on to our show. Take it away, Greg.
So I entitled today's show, The Magic of Gary Bartlett. I could have called it The Philosophy of Gary Bartlett because my guest today is going to talk about show business, the behind-the-scenes thinking that makes any performer shine and do magic well. Gary, thanks for being on the broadcast.
Thanks for having me.
This is going to be fun. Now, I know you started in magic many, many, many moons ago, and then your career developed into producing and working backstage. I know you've worked backstage for people like David Copperfield, and you know a lot of people like Lance Burton and the Pendragons and Greg Gleason. How did you get into magic? I mean, what happened? What was the thing that sparked your interest at the beginning?
Well, I grew up in a very conservative Christian family. We used to go to church every time the door was open, Sundays, Sunday nights, Wednesdays. And one time we had a magician come. His name was Lynn Van Buren. And when I saw him, I guess you could say I get bit by the magic bug. And then ever since then, I've been, you know, honing in on my skill and my craft. And it led me to working with a lot of great people and doing a lot of cool things. Though I don't perform anymore, I work behind the scenes with a lot of people, like you just said, with the Pendragons for 26 years, David Copperfield for 4 years, Caesar's Magical Empire, which is a $48 million dinner attraction at Caesar's Palace. So I've had a really nice run and looking forward to what comes next.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid in the 60s and 70s, Vegas was a different town run by different people. And then I guess years later, maybe I don't know when, maybe after Lance Burton retired, things became very, very commercial in the sense that corporations were buying up businesses and hotels and running all this shows on in Vegas. I remember you could go see Sammy Davis Jr. maybe for free because you lost all your savings and your money. And today, you know, if you lose everything at the slot machines, you're going to pay a couple hundred dollars to go see Celine Dion. Things have changed in Vegas. What can you tell us about the background of the backstage mindset of this industry? What's it like living in Vegas and working behind the scenes?
Well, first and foremost, if you're not used to the heat, and they say it's a dry heat, they always make a joke about, oh, it's a dry heat. Well, I'll tell you exactly what the dry heat is. When you you turn your oven to 450 degrees and you go to open it up to put something in, you feel that heat, that's what you feel. But, you know, you talked about previous people like the mob. When the mob ran the town, I'm a huge fan of the mob. I coined the phrase, what's the difference between the mob and a politician, organized crime, unorganized crime? With the mob, you never had to worry about getting your check cashed. They were great people to work with. As long as you didn't touch their women and their money, everything was done on a handshake. You didn't have to have like a 20-page contract anymore, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember meeting a guy at a magic shop about, I don't know, 6 years ago. He was probably in his 50s running a magic shop. I don't remember his name. And I said, what's it like? He goes, oh, after the age of 35, you can forget it. He says, I know a lot of magicians that come to Vegas. They want to try to make it big. He says, but you got to do the four walls. I said, what's the four walls? He says, what, are you kidding me? He goes, you got to rent the room. He goes, it's not like the day when the mob ran it. They would pay you good money. But today, if you want to perform in Vegas, you got to rent the space.
Yeah, there was a great magician by the name of Johnny Thompson, and he was like a father to me, he and Pam, and he's since passed away maybe about 2 years now. He told me some great stories about the mob. Like in between shows, they had mandatory parties. You had to show up, and they would put something extra in your check every week for that, and everything was done on a handshake, and I just have so much respect for them. You know, contrary to the stuff we all see on TV, you know, where they kill all these people, blah, 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 blah. But if you did business with them, you're an honest business person, if there's such a word as honest in the mob, you could make some really good money.
Yeah, and I remember years ago seeing Lance Burton, and I don't know the backstory. You probably know more of it than I do. Wonderful show, but then I understand he cashed out. He just kind of walked away. He saw things changing in the industry, in the business, And, you know, he walked away from that kind of career. So things are different. Now, I know you work in show business. What's it like working backstage in this culture of Vegas right now? Like, what's it like?
Well, anytime you work in a production or a show or even television production, you've got to be prepared for the worst case scenario. And I always say ability is important, but dependability is crucial. And so I've been fortunate that I'm a very dependable person. I don't have any major bad habits. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't, you know, do anything bad. So a lot of these people hire me knowing that I'm not going to get drunk when I get my first paycheck and try not to show up, you know. So I have a couple of different things. I also like to say have a plan, know your plan, work your plan. And a lot of these people do that. You know, David Copperfield's got a plan. He knows what it is, and he's working it, and it's made him a fortune.
What do you think is the mindset? And, you know, I'm certainly not going to ask you for secrets, but I'd really like to pick your brain for the philosophy behind a person like David Copperfield. Why do you think he is the number one commercial magician in the world? What is the mindset that makes up this guy? I know you rubbed shoulders with him for 4 years and you still keep in contact with him. But what do you think his mindset is? Why is he that successful? What is it that we can learn from him?
Well, I will tell you, he has what is known as the it factor. And I will tell you that I've worked with some other people, like Michael Jackson used to come to our show. Michael Jackson had the it factor, and so did Celine Dion. I worked with her on her just before her wedding. She had a private party. And they have this aura about them and this charisma and this confidence. And basically, no is not an option. They're going to find a way to do what they want to do. They have it in their mind what they want to do, and they will find a way to make it happen. And that's part of that it factor that David has. David will work tirelessly to make something happen. If he's bought into it and made a commitment to do it, he's going to do it.
Yeah, I saw a interview from his warehouse or his museum. I think it was back in like February. I think it was this year. And it was a candid behind the scenes live. Apparently it was live. And he was talking about the life of an artist. And I never heard him speak so authentically, in the sense that he said, listen, this is hard work. This involves pain. He goes, everybody sees me on stage and television. He says, but working out an act or working out a routine, tirelessly making something happen is angst. It's painful. And I never forgot it. I thought it was really beautifully said. It's not an easy life.
Yeah, when I worked for him in the 80s and 90s, we were doing annual TV specials. One thing that people don't understand is when you saw that TV special, that was 2 years worth of work, every little nuance of each trick or illusion before it went on television. He was very, very particular. Matter of fact, he would even have the editing crew come on the bus and travel with us. And so in between shows and in the morning, he would be editing his own TV specials.
Wow. Yeah, the story that I heard about David is he'd do a show, and then he'd run back and watch the video and then do the work. Like, he would look at the script. He would rewrite the script. He was a perfectionist, is a perfectionist. Is that a myth, or is that really true?
No, that is true. He would videotape every performance, and that's how we got some of the funny bits in the show. Like, we really did have a lady sitting in the front row with a pair of binoculars watching him, literally in the front row. So it was very funny. The audience thought it was funny. He watched the video, and he decided to put somebody in the front row with a pair of binoculars and just kept the gag going.
Wow. And speaking of having a plan, I figure if he's out doing shows every single night and every weekend, something might go wrong. What did he have as far as an out or a plan to cover up? Like, what are some of the things that have happened on the road?
Well, stage left, he has like a little tray sitting there. So if we had a prop break or something we needed him to stretch, we would yell between the curtains. He'd walk over to stage left and grab, it might be a trick called What's Next. It might be the torn or restored parking ticket, but he always had an out. So he had someplace to go. And worst case scenario, if we had to skip a trick, he would skip and go right into the next one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask you is, and I'm reaching for a word here, Lance Burton and people like Matt King seem to be very nice people, very authentic. At least that's what they project. In show business, do you find a lot of people that are that authentic and very kind and giving? Or what's your take of the performing arts right now in Vegas with the people that you've worked with?
I think the kindness comes with wisdom and age. You know, and sometimes in the beginning of our career, we're so worried about this, this, and this, and sometimes we might be a jerk. But a lot of people that have been in the business for a while, I will tell you that I worked as a stagehand at Caesar's Palace for a while when I left the David Copperfield show, and some of the nicest people were the country folk, you know, the Vince Gills. Matter of fact, these stagehands, we would play – everybody that came in town, we would play – and we did this when I worked for David Copperfield. We play softball or baseball against the cast, against the crew. And so we played one time we had Willie Nelson pitching against us, all sorts of different things. But I think with age, a lot of people mellow out a lot.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good thing. And, you know, I'm like 58, and I reflect upon the last 10, 20 years of my life, and I'm not the same guy. I think when you're starting out, you see things differently. So I know you have a story about Larry the Cable Guy. I don't know where you're going to go with this, but I'd love to ask you, what's the story behind Larry and the Cable Guy in that show?
Sure. I've got a buddy that's really close to him, and they all grew up. He and Carrot Top and all of them grew up together. But Kirby Van Burch, who was known as the Prince of Magic, he used to do illusions with Lions and Tigers. He was working in Branson. He'd been down there for about 22 years, and he likes me, and he knows I can always give him a good advice. I'm not a yes guy. And so he said, we're filming this thing for Larry the Cable Guy. It's going on the History Channel. Will you come out and help me? I said, sure. So I get there. I said, where's the craft service? And he's like, what? I said, there should be some food here. I said, you need to go get one of your cigars because Larry loves cigars. And so Larry, before we were taping, was in Kirby Van Burch's magic shop. He's trying to buy some magic stuff for his kids. And he had like $300 or $400 stuff, and he was ready to pay for it. And I called up Kirby. I said, Kirby, you can't let him pay for this. You know, you're going to be going on national TV. So Kirby called the magic shop and said, whatever he wants is free. And then Larry the Cable Guy and I became friends ever since then. And he did a nice little video cameo on my phone for my friend Jamie Porter down in West Palm Beach. But Larry's another great guy with the it factor.
Okay. And I understand that you have a background in Missouri with David Letterman. My path of David Letterman, I think, crossed in 1995. Tell us the story about you working for Dave in Missouri.
Yeah, I was the local producer for the Stupid Pet and Human Trick auditions for 6 years, and I would coordinate everything from the camera crews to the lights, the sound, the stage, to even the contracts that people were signing. And so I did 6 years with them, and that was always fun. We did have one person out of the 6 years that made it onto the David Letterman show.
So only one in 6 years?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was some really good talent, but we had one that was really amazing. So,
what was it? What were they doing?
His name was Matt Gum, and he played a really special instrument, and it was amazing. And it was actually almost stupid, but it was funny, but it was amazing. And when they got back, they said, we want him. They called me. I said, okay. And they flew him out, and he did one night on the show and flew him back to Missouri and took very good care of him.
So in other words, people come out and they'll audition for getting their 15 minutes of fame. And then you're recording all this stuff, and then you're sending it to Worldwide Pants in New York, and then they're looking at it, and then they're shifting through it like a job application?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the other producers that actually worked for Worldwide Pants stood next to me, and he would take some notes along the way and say, oh, this guy was good, so he would know where to go back to look at the tape.
What do you think motivated people to go on that show, just their 15 minutes of fame, or what do you think it was?
Well, some people think that they're talented, and some have talent and some don't. And some just want to get up in front of an audience and say, you know, they want to put in their resume, audition for this. So.
Right. Yeah. 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 What about, let's talk about a little bit about Michael Jackson. I never met him. I thought he was wonderful as a performer. What stories do you have about Michael?
Well, couple of different things. Michael was really good friends with David Copperfield, and so he would come and hang out at our show. And David came up to us. He says, "I don't mind you talking to, but no pictures and no autographs." He just wanted him to feel like he didn't have to be on, you know. And when we were in Santa Barbara, David went and spent the night at Neverland, and David helped him with a couple things on that tour that was supposed to happen that never happened, unfortunately. But that leads into Franz Harari. I was working with Franz Harari and just off Broadway at the Criterion Theater, and he was going to be on the Regis and Kathy Lee show doing a trick called the Slicer Illusion, and he had hired me to work with him on that. So it's about 4 o'clock in the morning, and we can't get a truck to bring the prop to the studio. So, you know, relying on me, I went down and I flagged down a milk truck, literally a milk truck. And we paid him some cash, and we loaded the illusion inside of a milk truck to get it to the studio. And then it was nothing but milk jokes for the rest of the day. But Franz was the guy that created all the magic behind Michael Jackson. So when Michael Jackson did all his tours, Franz was the guy that created all that magic for him.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was Copperfield, but yeah, that makes sense. And I remember being in Vegas maybe about 5 years ago, and I ran into a guy that was working at the Houdini magic shop, and he would tell me, "Oh, Michael would call my house at 2 a.m. I said, "You got to be kidding me." He goes, "No." He goes, "What do you got as far as magic? And let's hang out." I guess he had a love for magic, right?
He loved magic, and he would come hang out at the magic shops. They would close the magic shops down, and they would sit in the back room, and they would show him magic stuff. He loved magic.
Yeah, and I remember seeing his stage show on video, and I don't know if he did appearances or he disappeared, but I know that he used some of those illusions, as you said.
Yeah, and there's a very famous picture of Franz Harari levitating Michael Jackson. It was on the National Choir probably about 20, maybe 25 years ago, sort of dating myself a little bit, but... Yeah, Franz created a lot of stuff for him. Also, Alice Cooper, a whole bunch of these people. So,
right. Yeah. I don't know if you see much of it today. I mean, who as an artist is using theatrical, magical illusions? I don't know. Is Britney Spears doing it? I'm not sure.
You know, Britney Spears did do it. She had David Mendoza, who was just here. We hung out last weekend. David Mendoza is a manufacturer, not only magic, but scenery and props, and he was hired to build all the illusions for it, and then he recommended Ed Alonso. So Ed Alonso was the magician doing all the magic with Britney Spears on her tour, and there's a couple other people. He just did some stuff for J-Lo. So there's a lot of rock and roll shows that are incorporating some kind of magic, maybe more sort of like a special effect, but it's an actual magic or illusion trick. So.
Right. Right. Well, I want to switch gears a little bit. Now, here it is, June 2021. Last year was crazy for the entertainment industry, and in my world, the travel industry, because I go to Israel mostly every year. What was it like? What was it like in Vegas in 2020, you know, last year? What was all these shows closed? How was that?
Right. I was supposed to be on my way to Saudi Arabia with Steve Wheeler on Magic on Ice. And the Crown Prince, which is the equivalent to like the Vice President of the United States, had invited us over there for about 6 to 8 weeks, and that stopped. And then when everything really started to stop, it was like you literally could roll a bowling ball down the strip, and there were no cars. I mean, they sort of had us on lockdown, and they said avoid certain places, and, you know, and then after X amount of months, then people got cabin fever, and a lot of people started going out. But it was absolutely crazy. Nothing was really open. And you had to make reservations if you were going to go somewhere. And it was crazy, absolutely crazy.
Now, are you seeing things open now? I think David Copperfield at the MGM is open. Is it true?
David opened up a couple weeks back. He tried to open up, I think, around December. And then, according to the news, I guess one of his team members had COVID, so they shut it back down. But the first week Vegas opened back up, we did over $1 billion, but we lost more than $1 billion. We had the NFL first draft pick that was going to be here. The world famous CES show was going to be here. They all canceled. There's a big show called EDC. It's like a big rave where 500,000 people show up from all over the world, all ages, canceled. So we lost a lot of revenue here. but it's all now starting to open back up. And like I said, they did $1 billion the first week that Vegas actually opened back up.
That's mind-blowing. It's just so, I mean, from a Christian point of view, a philosophical point of view, mm-hmm. how has this changed you? I mean, you are in the center of the entertainment industry, right? I guess the other place
Absolutely.
Would be Hollywood. So what have you learned? I mean, the experiences, the philosophy, the mindset that could help people.
Well, one thing I've learned is patience, and that may sound like an understatement, but I've learned to respond to life instead of react. To react is negative, to respond is positive. So, you know, there's certain things I just don't worry about. It's like, you know, I've been able to cover my bills every month. I don't worry about money. You know, I know that certain things are out of my control. You just have to give it to God and just let it happen. So that's where I'm at.
Right, right. And, you know, I know there was a lot of, you know, talk on the internet, a lot of social media about what's really going on. Did you get caught up in all of that, or did you pretty much keep your cards close to your chest? I mean, what are your thoughts about all of that stuff?
Well, I did follow some of that. I don't want to get too political, but I did follow some of that stuff, and I was involved in a private chat. I was shocked as to some of the people that were in that chat. Some very famous people, some news media people were in the same chat, so I was sort of following it. But I was just sort of laying low. I don't like to, on social media, you'll never see me post anything about religion except, you know, the season, the reason for the season, you know, Christmas and Easter. I'll say something then,
right.
But I don't post anything about political except go vote. And I just try to stay neutral because, you know, you don't want to tick off somebody on one side that might hire you, you know.
Exactly. And what I've learned through it, because when it really started coming out in March, I was mesmerized. I was finding myself on social media till like 2 a.m. looking at Facebook, trying to figure it out, trying to make sense of it. And then all of a sudden I began to think to myself, I got to stop this. I got to unplug. So I did. But I do agree with you. I mean, you could say something that would, you know, politicize somebody. They might not hire you. They might not like you. Forget about somebody unfriending you. There could be, you know, consequences as far as employment. So, yeah, you're being a positive light without being political. I think that's a great way of going. We got 7 minutes left. So I always like to ask my guests, you know, how do you want to be remembered? I mean, you seem like a young guy like me. How do you want to be remembered? What's the legacy that you want to leave? I know you love show business, and I know you're a reliable person, but tell us in your own words.
I guess the main thing is I want to be remembered as a very nice guy, a guy that would give it all, a guy that would do whatever it takes, a guy that you could trust, a guy that's going to look out for you and your brand. That's how I'd like to be remembered.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's real. I think, you know, when you get to a certain age, you realize life is about giving. And I love the story we were talking about earlier about Anthony Robbins. I'm a big fan. I did some security behind the scenes for him. Got to talk to him once or twice, not really a long time. But I understand you had an encounter with Tony, and it was a very giving encounter.
Yeah, I've been reading his books, Awaken the Giant Within and some of these other books. And our producers, we were in San Diego, and Tony was actually living in San Diego at the time. Our producers ran into him at the gym and said, hey, you should come see our show. And so he came to see our show, and David Copperfield was in the theater. It was just them talking. David goes, we got a guy that reads your books. He goes, oh, bring him out here. So I came out there. We took a picture. We chit-chatted for a little bit. He asked me if I had a business card, and I gave him my business card. And, it, you know, everything would go through David Copperfield's office. And 2 weeks later, we're in Canada, and there's a box that shows up at the theater. And I'm like, whoa, what is this? And I open up. There's a personal letter from him. And he sent me everything that he sells, and he knew that I had a phobia of snakes. And in his letter, he stated that once you get over your phobia of snakes, contact me and we'll celebrate. And so he sent me probably, I don't know, $500 worth of stuff for free and autographed the books.
Yeah.
And what a super neat guy, you know?
Yeah, and it's not the first time I've heard that. I've heard some, you know, stories on the road where, you know, Tony would meet somebody and say, hey, can you give me your business card? And then a week later, there'd be a whole big box of things. The other thing I wanted to ask you is, What about somebody that wants to be in business? It doesn't have to be show business. You know, show business is a specific calling per se, but someone that just wants to run a business, what do you think you've learned over the last years of working with people that you have worked with? What do you think some of the advice you could share with our audience?
Well, it goes back to one of my favorite sayings, have a plan, know your plan, work your plan. I talk to a lot of people and they ask me, hey, can you help me this and help me with that? And, you know, one of the key things is if you do want to start a business, you need to know your market. You should, probably should do a business plan. But here's something else that people do not realize. There's a company called SCORE. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It stands for Service Corps of Retired Executives. And so every city has got a SCORE office. And so when I was in Missouri and I was working on my company, I had one of the vice presidents of Hallmark as my advisor. And so he gave me lots of great advice. And what's really cool is he actually mentored me. There were several different people that did that. I still see some people here in Vegas at SCORE, but SCORE is an absolute great resource. I think it's SCORE.org is their website. But if somebody wants to get into business and they don't know, they offer some low-cost seminars on how to write a business plan, how to read a certain financial statements. They even teach QuickBooks. They have marketing classes. They've got lots of stuff, but you can actually get somebody that's in your field that can actually mentor you to get you to where you want to go. That's probably one of the greatest resources for any businessman out there.
Yeah, I remember years ago being in New York City, and I was at this expo. I think it was the Jacob Javits Center, and they had some retired people from the SCORE. And at the time, you know, I was telling them, I love magic, but I'm also into travel. I'm also a minister. I also got this going. And the guy said to me, gosh, you seem to be all over the place. And it was really interesting to hear his feedback. And it definitely is a great resource. And it's this idea of people giving back to other people because they've learned something. And I think, you know, and you probably have learned this from Tony Robbins, the fastest way to get somewhere is to find a mentor that's already done it. And if they'll, you know, help you, you can shave time off your learning curve, like weeks, years, and months.
Yeah. And Tony Robbins also says, if you don't like the answer, ask a better question. And I think people need to start asking some better questions in order to get them to where they want to go.
So we got 3 minutes left. It's amazing how fast this goes. If folks want to follow you, I looked at your LinkedIn profile, very professional. But if they want to follow you on Facebook, how do they get a hold of you?
It's Gary E. Bartlett on Facebook, and my email is GaryBart98@yahoo.com.
Excellent, excellent. So what's the next step for you? I know you got some things you're thinking about, you're praying about.
Right.
What's the next step?
I've been applying for some entertainment director position jobs because I'm not sure what's going to happen with the touring yet. So there's several hotels that are looking for entertainment people. I know I'm overqualified for most of them, and I don't mean that in an arrogant way, but I know I could be a great asset to some of these hotels. I got some really cool ideas for some special events that they could be doing. I got some ideas for some TV shows that could be done. And these hotels have got the money to finance it, and it'd be a great marketing tool for them on some of these projects I have. So,
yeah. Well, you know, travel has really been hit hard. You know, I'm in the travel business. I take people to Israel, and the people that I work with in the Middle East, they haven't seen a paycheck in over a year, going on a year and a half. I haven't been to Vegas. I haven't been on a plane since. But I do believe that things are opening up. I see churches opening up. I see less restrictions. The fact that you're in Vegas and you're being well, this is all good news. And so I'm hoping we're going to be moving forward, you know?
Yeah, I was in church this morning, actually, and it's sort of nice to go in there and not have masks, and we don't have to sit every other row. And I'll tell you what, our church was packed, absolutely packed.
Wow, so there is hope. Well, Gary, thank you so much. I'm just looking at the time. We'll have to do this again in the future. But if I get out there to Vegas, and I hope I will for one of these conventions, I'll have. But thank you
that
so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Okay. All right. God bless. All right. Bye, everybody. Just remember this. Stay focused and mind yourself. Thanks, Gary. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Greg Dwyer Radio Show, brought to you by motivational speaker Greg Dwyer on buildingfortunesradio.com. Check out Greg at gregdwyer.com. Be sure to download his ebook at gregdwyerebook.com to stay focused on what matters most to you. That's www.gregdwyerebook.com. We want to thank you for listening. Now go make a difference in your world.